Are we ready to get started?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. I'm Mitch.
I'm Austin.
And this is Devil Town.
Dash gay.
Devil Town dash gay. this is our... I've been wanting to do an episode on, like, LGBTQ issues, but there's so little in the show to talk about that I never felt like there was enough. So this week, being Pride Month and the week of the first out NFL player, I was like, might as well. Let's take advantage.
Well, see, okay, so the first out NFL player we have... What confused me was that we had Michael Sam, right? That may be just me being ignorant of NFL history.
Michael Sam didn't actually play, neither has Nassib. Michael Sam never played an actual game on an NFL field as an out player, but neither has what's-his-face yet. But he's a six-year veteran. He's definitely not getting cut. Like, he'll play next season.
I mean, he did get cut for the Browns.
No, but like he will play for the Raiders next season. It's pretty safe bet.
Oh, if
what I thought was interesting is he did not, Carl Nassib did not say anything in his statement hinting at the fact that he's the first. All the headlines say first, which feels a little bit unfair to him because he didn't say he was. He didn't claim to be. It's honestly as important as it is. That's a like argument that doesn't need to be made. We don't need to be debating was Michael Sam the first or was Carl Nassib the first.
No.
They both were in their own ways.
Yeah.
Michael Sam definitely was a first, and you know, his response was very different than the response that Carl Nassib has gotten for a lot of different reasons. I respect the fact that he made a really good statement, Nassib did, and he didn't make it about whether or not he was the first.
Right.
It didn't seem to be anything that he was thinking about. I looked it up. There was an SB Nation article. You know, every publication put out an article about Nassib. SB Nation's was really good. They interviewed, what's his name? Dave Cope, who was the first ex-NFL player to come out.
Okay.
And they called up Dave Cope, who came out in 1975, and his quote was, "No shit, that's great." but the SB Nation, there have been 16 players that have come out after they played. Talking about first, though.
Publicly, anyway.
Yeah. No, there have been countless more that have not been out.
I was watching a video on, what was his name? he was a punter for the Colts. Mm-hmm. He's kind of, I forget what his name is. Honestly, kind of a douche.
Yeah.
But he was talking about Carl Nassib, and he said that... he was starting to talk. He's talked briefly on like the culture that the NFL produces and how it is not open for that type of thing. And
I'm honestly surprised that we got one NFL before NBA or another league, because NFL players. We had what's his face?
There was an NBA player.
What was his name?
I forget what his name was.
But again, he came out and then retired.
Yeah.
Because NFL players, for the number of players that are on each team, most of them are not celebrities.
Right.
Like, most teams are filled out with people that have single-digit year careers and just kind of disappear, and no one really knows them very well.
Yeah.
Compared to, like, basketball, where, like, most of the starters on any team are household names in their area.
Right.
I was looking – I found some, like, write-ups of, like, here's some major first. It's really hard to talk about firsts for queer athletes because, like, these things are so amorphous. And also, a lot of the firsts are not happy stories.
No.
A lot of the firsts are people being outed or, you know, the first major British soccer player was going to be outed. So he came out about it proactively, was treated horribly, and then committed suicide. Like there's a lot of really sad stories when you look at first. So it's not really like, I think it's good and interesting that we're at a point where he can make this statement and generally be like, most of the negative stuff I've seen has been negative in the like, why are you going to talk about it? Why are you going to make a big deal out of it? Which is still shitty and homophobic, but
yeah.
in a different way, because historically, a lot of these firsts were people being outed and then being ostracized.
Yeah.
So, like, we've come a long way. He even got a lot less hate than Michael Sam did. It's so sad that's a long
way. But.
Well, even big ones that you know. Billie Jean King was outed when her lover of 10 years sued her and her husband. Like, it was a big public scandal. Maria yeah. Navratilova was outed against her will. Like, a lot of the big firsts, it was not a good thing.
Yeah.
And most of them, you know, it's been like a lurching thing. And even now, like, you have Nassib, who is doing it on his own terms, his own choice, which is a good thing. But there are a lot of people that are still having to, like, do it in a way that involves fighting, especially when you're looking at, like, trans and intersex and other yeah. queer athletes. I mean, is it Carter Semyana? How do you pronounce her name? The sprinter.
Like, I don't remember.
That was only, like, yeah. 2 years ago. And that was not at all a nice, heart, like, yeah. uplifting story.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's, you know, they're...
Smayana,
I think. I don't think I've ever heard it said aloud. Yeah, I don't have a lot of stuff about first because it's just kind of not a nice thing to talk about.
Yeah.
I think it's cool that, like, we're finally at a place where this first was his choice and it was generally fine.
Yeah.
Like, his team supports him. The NFL supports him. Nobody in the organization has said anything really shitty about it yet. So, yeah. like...
Oh, all cool. the people that are watching it definitely said some shitty stuff.
I don't, yeah, but, like, they always will. Who cares? Yeah, they always will. He hasn't lost in... Like, you know?
Yeah.
It wasn't what it was for most other gay athletes in history, where if it happened, it was usually not their choice, and it was really, really harmful to their careers.
Right.
Even like Navratilova, like she stayed playing tennis, but she lost a lot of her endorsements and stuff.
That's so goddamn.
Yeah, but that's not like he's not there. We're not there.
Right.
Also, like this is a complaint I had. I had a little bit when Michael Sam did. A lot of these barriers were broken by women a decade before they've been broken by men.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
People just don't pay attention to women's sports. The women's soccer team that is so much better than the men's U.S. soccer team is like half lesbian.
Yeah.
Like, and they've been out, you know, Megan Rapinoe's been out for 10 years.
Yeah.
People just don't pay. How many WNBA players are openly lesbian?
Softball players.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There have been a lot of female athletes who have been very brave and open about their sexuality that didn't get near the press yeah. or attention. Because it's just people, they're not household names the way that NFL players are.
Kat Osterman, that's one specifically that I was thinking of.
So yeah, that's, I mean, I really liked his statement. I thought he did a good job of like putting the focus. If people only talked about what he said, then he chose his words very carefully and put the focus in good places. Sadly, a lot of the articles being written are not about what he said. It's arguments about, well, is he technically first? That's not what is important.
Yeah.
But his statement was nice. Right. I liked his yeah. statement.
Well, and then he donated $500,000
to the Trevor Project.
Yeah.
I'm curious to see basketball and baseball will be big ones.
Collins.
Yeah.
I forget what his first name is, but that's his last
name.
He's
really cool. But yeah, he didn't play. He came out and then was between teams and then retired before he got picked up by anybody.
Right. Yeah.
If you want to read though, his like cover story in Sports Illustrated, I think whichever magazine did a cover story of him, it is like a amazing interview. I don't like read sports stuff very often, but I read his story. And that feature about Collins when he came out was yeah. like he spoke so well about the issue in a way that very few other people have ever spoken about it.
Yeah. Well, also talking about SI, it kind of bums me out that they are kind of put on the back burner now.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
because they actually had like good writing.
They're like Rolling Stone.
Yeah.
It is not the authority on its subject that it used to be. They still have good writers.
Yeah.
They still put out good journalism yeah. sometimes.
Yeah. But back to this. Sorry. It bummed me out.
No, I don't really have anything else to say about Nassib.
Oh, yeah.
Do you think, I just don't want to be pessimistic, do you think there's a chance that he won't play next year?
I think that if he got cut by the Browns 2 years ago, I think there is a chance that he couldn't. Now, he may have gotten better, and they may be in a position where they need him.
I think the tide has turned a little bit. Michael Sam team saw it as too risky to take him.
Oh, I think that it's a situation. I think the
Raiders see it as too risky to cut him.
Oh, that's what I was going to say. Like, I was going to say, like, at this point, there is so much, like, goodwill towards the situation. I think if the Raiders
wanted to cut him as a player because of, like, playing performance, they wouldn't this year.
Right.
Because of the PR element.
And he may not even play, but he may – I mean, he's going to still be on the team.
Yeah.
They definitely will. Now, he's also going to be thrust into the spotlight when it comes to those types of situations. Mm-hmm. Like, when the NFL – talks about diversity. He's gonna be the face.
I'm curious to see how he does that, because like he's very like well spoken.
He is.
He is not a Gus Kinsworthy. He is not a. He doesn't seem like he's looking for the spotlight.
No.
I love Gus Kinsworthy, but like Gus Kinsworthy realized he could be way more famous being a gay than he could be being a skier, and he leaned in hard on that. Like. He put more work into taking Instagram pictures in short shorts at, you know, music festivals than he did skiing for a couple years.
He's respected. He is, I mean, that you could see that in Hard Knocks. Like, yep. And that's what, what's his name was talking about? The guy, I forget what his name is, the Colts punter, whatever. He was talking to Pat McAfee. That's his name. He was talking about how, like, there's a difference between people that are doing that for the spotlight, like, talking, like, getting out in front of the camera, what have you, and people that are just, like, people respect you so you can talk to them. And that, and you can tell that people respect him. He's going to be put into a position that I don't necessarily know that he wants
But I think probably, he'll handle it well.
He will. And I think that he probably had to know that was going to be something.
His is also an interesting case because he seems to have been relatively out before this statement. Like, he was not. From everything I've read online, he was. Like, if you were in his circles a couple of years ago, it was not a secret.
Right.
He just wasn't ever a big enough name for people to like.
Right.
You know, if no one's going to give his name to the tabloids the way they would have if it was a big star.
Right.
But that means he made this decision not because he had to, because he was going to be outed. It wasn't going to be this big scandal. He chose to.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, that makes me hopeful for, like, whatever role he takes in the NFL now as the face. He clearly knew what he was doing when he chose.
Yes. He's probably thought it out. Yeah. He's definitely tried to figure out the logistics of what this means. Now, if Gruden fires him or can't, like,
I don't think there's any chance this year because it would be too much of
There's no way. Especially, oh God, what if he did it and he ends up cutting him? I just thought of the worst situation.
He would get picked up. For the PR.
Oh, he would. Yeah, I feel like the worst situation would be, like, him to get cut and then
the Rams pick him up, and then they put him on a practice squad, and then cut him. And you realize this is just the Rams thing. They just have, like, a weird fetish for snatching up gay athletes and then not letting them play.
God. There's – and it. Hopefully this is a good – situation for other players in the NFL that are gay.
I hope it's like a watershed where, like, you know, the numbers wise, there have to be others.
There has to.
I hope that they can realize that, like, a lot of the pressure of being the quote unquote first means that you are going to be bombarded by he's forever going to be in every list that comes out June every year. That might not be true for the second or third or fourth player. So if I'm a player who maybe wasn't doing it because you're just a private person who doesn't want that kind of attention.
Right, yeah.
Maybe now it's no big deal.
Well, and now, and this is a tragic case, Aaron Hernandez.
Oh my gosh.
But we know after the fact that he was. But at the time, it was no big deal.
Oh my gosh. Aaron Hernandez is so fascinating to me, but it's like such a bummer.
Such a sad story. Oh my God.
That's so fascinating.
But and I was just there's a good chance that there's a lot of players that are they may just be too young to realize it. Mm-hmm. Like they may not have gotten to the point where they've gotten to the point in their life where they can understand it. Because I think it's like 3.5 years. 3 years is the median, like the average NFL
career length. Yeah.
And at that point, they come into the league at 21, 22 years old.
Yeah.
Or 24, 25, 26. Like, that is...
I'm wondering how many will have, like... It seems to me like he was relatively open. I bet his teammates that he was close to on the team knew. His family knew. Like, he was open.
Right.
I'm wondering how many players there are who essentially are out. It just hasn't been a major news story, you know?
Right, yeah.
Like... And now that this has happened, it'd be very easy for a player to come in never having been in the closet. And we're not going to get news stories about that person. They're just going to be a player on the team.
Yeah.
And because the NFL is so big, we don't know. Like, most fans don't know the biographical details of every player on their team.
Yeah.
No. So probably going to have a lot of players who are out. They're just not national news.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Which is, I think, a good place to aim for.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to be news.
It doesn't. No. I mean, it does now.
Yeah. No, this one I'm glad it is. Yes. It's important. But, like, if a player comes in 3 years from now and he's out in every aspect of his life before he makes the team, what kind of statement is there to make? It's a little bit like what, I mean, it happened to Lil Nas X, it happened to Troy Sivan. They were both pretty out before they got famous. So when they got famous, it's like, okay, how do you come out when you're already out? Because if you do make it a big coming out thing, then a bunch of people are like, why are you looking for attention? Everybody already knew. It's no secret.
Yeah.
If you're already out and everybody already knows before you get famous, you're kind of in a weird position.
The goal is for it to be as kind of ridiculous as this sounds, a mundanity.
Like, I hope it trickles down. You know, I hope that, like, you know, it's a lot easier for high schoolers and kids to be out than it was when we were in school or even longer ago.
Yeah.
But I still feel like maybe a football team is a place where it isn't as easy to be out in high school in most places in America.
Right.
So hopefully this trickles down to where, like, yeah, maybe it won't be as big a deal for an NFL player after this because you're older, but it's still a big deal for a bunch of 15 and 16 year olds
who
most of their social circle is their football team.
Yeah.
Like, that's still somewhere that needs more acceptance.
Right.
Community wise. So hopefully this works its way down
hopefully,
there.
Yeah.
All right. What I really wanted to talk about today. You didn't
want to talk about the sad history of
the
LGBTQ
community. I bummed myself out looking it up yesterday.
In the NFL.
What I really want to talk about is gay characters in Friday Night Lights.
I can name that have speaking parts.
There are three, canonically.
Okay. There is assistant coach, seasons 4 and 5.
Stan Traub.
Okay. There is, and I'm terrible with names, there is bassist.
Devin.
I don't remember.
You're forgetting the biggest one. Mayor Lucy Rodell.
Okay.
She is. It's season one.
She is.
Season one, like, she, like.
That's right, because they mention it.
She brings her partner to dinner with the Taylors.
They mention it, and they're like, I don't know how to feel about this kind of situation.
Yeah. Devin is the big one.
I think it's because I hated her so much.
I kind of love that. Like, they put it in season one. They show it like a kind of queer person that does exist and is realistic.
Yeah.
She is like a lesbian who had lived in Texas during an era where it was very, very hard to be a gay person in Texas.
Right.
And like she reminds me of Leslie Knope's mom in Parks and Rec, where like she is who she is because she had to be pretty cold and harsh and ruthless. And it paid off. Like, she's the mayor. But she's not a nice, pleasant person.
I feel like they're the same people.
Yeah, they're very similar. The mayor is, you know, if the mayor was her only representation, I wouldn't like it. But I do like that she exists. Because that is a realistic person that exists.
The
Devin's the big one that we see the big story, the coming out.
Right.
And then Stan is just too sad. So tragic. They do what they did with Becky, where they give you 5 or 6 episodes, making him the most annoying person on the planet, and then real quick twist it and give him something really heartfelt where you're like, oh, I want to feel this, but he's so annoying. I know.
Well, and they're like, Julie handled it so well. Oh, like
Julie's a champ for both, for Devin and for Stan.
Like, because that's the same period of time.
It's the same episode. Yeah.
Jeez,
no, Louise. It's Devin coming out to Landry is right. Season three.
But they season go to four, they go to a gay bar.
She takes Devin to the gay bar and they see Stan.
Right.
They see it at the gay bar. She waves to him. He like acknowledges her and then leaves. And then they see each other at the cookout later.
Right.
And she like pulls him aside and is like, hey, just so you know, I'm not going to tell anybody. And he's like, I don't know what you're talking about. Oh, God. It is. I will say, I'm not a big fan of the character. He's kind of annoying when he's like, you know, Coach Taylor's lapdog. But Russell DeGraser, the actor, for 2 scenes that are mostly silent, that is a like Emmy worthy performance. It really is. Like I watched him yesterday.
He's very good.
He like you see him silently in the bar, not speaking, and then the only line he speaks at the cookout is pretending like he doesn't know what she's talking about, and he gives a full story in those 2 scenes.
Honestly, like as much as he is annoying, because he works at like Best Buy or like Circuit City or something.
He is, they make him abrasive at the beginning. Yeah. He's a great character.
For him, one of my favorite moments of like the last 2 seasons is when they don't have a place to watch film. So he takes them to work and like quarantines them off. And it's like, don't bother them. They're watching tape.
No, he's a great character. He's, I like putting Eric up against people that he doesn't like but aren't bad because he knows that he can't, like, he doesn't have any reason to not like him. He's been only great to him.
Yeah.
But he doesn't like him.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of other people that are like that because, I mean, like, some of the players are like that, too. Matt, sometimes he does that, definitely. And Matt, he grows on him, but I mean...
Well, a lot of the social scenes where, like, they have to play nice with the mayor or with, JD's parents. Like, Eric is not great at making nice with people that he doesn't personally like that much. He doesn't personally like hardly anybody. he's a very Texas dad.
Yes, he is. My dad.
I was thinking about this. I rewatched the scenes with Devin yesterday.
Okay.
The Landry coming out, they do it over 2 episodes. They handle that really well because Landry does not react perfectly, but he reacts very realistically for Landry the first time. He kisses her. She kisses him back a little bit, and then she leaves. And then the next time they see each other, she tells him, which is good. Like, that's very mature for her at that age in Texas. His response when she tells him is... mostly his focus is on, I just kissed this girl and I thought she was going to be my girlfriend and now she's not, so I am in a bad position.
Yeah.
It doesn't even cross his mind that she has just come out. So he reacts thinking about himself. But he rectifies that the next time they see each other, which is good. Like, Landry's a good one. Landry and Julie both are good.
Right, yeah. Are we going to talk about the people that negatively, like...
There really aren't very many. Yeah. I was thinking... I wrote like, a little bit...
This is going to be a bummer.
No, there really isn't much negative, though. I was thinking about just, like, representation. I feel like it would be really easy for someone to watch this show and complain that it doesn't have much representation, which is true. I want there to be shows that represent everybody.
Yeah.
But... this is, I was thinking about like my own life. This is extremely realistic for the size of town they are and the time it was. I lived in a town roughly the same size as Dylan, the same exact years that the show was taking place. And like, I was in the closet. I knew maybe 3 people in my high school that were out. Wasn't really friends with any of them. I didn't know any adults that were out. Like, I honestly had never met an adult that I was aware of them being gay. So in 2009, when I left my hometown, I only had ever met like 3 gay people and they were other high schoolers. That was true.
Yeah.
So if you go to Dylan in 2008 or 2009, there aren't a lot of people to be telling stories about. if you're talking about representation, it's kind of the same thing we talked about last episode, where it is satisfying and good to show the cartoonishly villainous bad guys in something like Parks and Rec with Marshawn Marshall.
Right.
That has its place and is useful. I think it's super useful and good for there to be shows that have aggressive, positive representation. I also think it's good and useful to have shows that are very, very grounded in reality, like one is.
Yeah.
The problem would be if only one of those two things existed. So, like, as long as we have shows with a lot of representation that have more, I'm fine with Friday Night Lights not having a whole lot of out characters because that's true to life.
Right, yeah.
It would be a problem if that was all that existed.
Yeah.
And you compare it to Jason Kadam's other show, Parenthood, which is a very, very liberal family set in Berkeley with no gay characters. And it's like, that doesn't make sense to me. That's a choice they're making.
Yeah.
Logically, there would be gay people here. In 2012, in Berkeley, there would be gay people in this show.
Yes.
And there aren't, which is like, why aren't there?
Yeah.
In Friday Night Lights, yeah, statistically, there are probably tons of people in that we see in the show that are, but it makes sense for most of them to be closeted.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And, you know, their options are give us these like really small moments realistically, or, you know, if you made it a bigger deal, if you made one of our leads queer and made that part of the big story, you would have to reckon with the fact that a lot of the characters that we know and love probably wouldn't be very great with it.
Yeah.
And I don't think they wanted to do that. Mm-hmm. I don't think they wanted to show our favorite characters not being accepting. So their solution was just don't ever make them reckon with it, you know?
Yeah.
It's a bummer.
It is.
I am not mad at the way that they handle Stan or Devin or Mayor Riddell. I would have loved to have seen more from any of the three of them. I would have loved to look at their stories more
right.
in depth.
Yeah.
But the way they handled them was very, very realistic.
It
and
was
like true.
Yeah, it was. It is, but it isn't just like happy-go-lucky.
No.
And it's not.
But I mean, it wouldn't have been.
I know.
At the time.
And that's why it's,
I was reading something about representation. It was, I can't remember who was writing, but they were talking about how sometimes, like, explicit representation is good, and I do want that. I'm not trying to say that it's not. I want there to be tons of shows with tons of queer rep so that you cover all the bases. But sometimes throwing in one token character is less of a good influence on people because it becomes something concrete that you either can or cannot identify with. If you have a character who is an allegory, or I just watched Luca the other day. If you have characters that are allegories for an outcast, any kid who is an outcast in any way can identify with that story in some way. If you have a cast of eight people and one of them is a lesbian, I want there to be, like, that's good. But that is representation for one type of person, a lesbian, and it's not representation for all the other types of people
right.
that exist.
Yeah.
So, like, yes, of course I want shows that have lesbians and gay men and trans people and all the representation, but there is also a place for, you know, allegorical, more generic stuff because kids can latch on to that.
Yeah.
Even if it's not exactly them, and sometimes it's easier to latch on when it is more vague.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, there's a lot of shows now that it is a lot easier for TV shows to put in queer characters, there are a lot of shows that have big casts and they have one token gay. And that's not great representation either. Like, that doesn't feel... I would almost rather watch something where I can identify with a character on a metaphorical sense than a show where there is one queer person in the universe and they're very, very different from me. Like, it doesn't feel like representation.
No.
So, you know, it takes all types. I really like the existence of a show like Schitt's Creek where they're imagining a world where homophobia doesn't exist. I love that sometimes.
Yeah.
I also love watching something that feels very, very grounded and real sometimes.
Yeah.
We need both.
Yeah. They both need to exist. That makes sense. I mean, it's... we're getting now to the point where we do have all types of representation, yeah. which is good. And it, a lot of the ones that are doing like the one note representation yeah. stuff is getting called out.
Yeah, so, no, I like that.
Yeah.
Because yeah, it's also not realistic. Like, I don't know how many queer people exist where they are the only queer person in their social circle. It's not most of it's not happy endings where you have five straight people and one gay people and that's the friend group.
Right.
Like, that's and not also, terribly realistic.
And also, like, on happy endings, not
that, I love happy endings.
But. I do too. But, like, yes, he's gay. He is very, like, he reads straight.
Yeah,
very much so.
I have gotten into this argument with a million people online. There was a brief period in the 90s where the first boundary-breaking shows were these, like, big, over-exaggerated stereotypes. Will and Grace, that type right. of thing.
Yeah.
There was a very brief period where the only gay men you were going to see on TV were these really flamboyant Jack from Will and Grace stereotypes.
Right, yeah.
Pretty quickly, it from the early 2000s till now, it flipped to where now you are way more likely to see a character who is in every single way straight presenting who just happens to be gay. That's yeah. cool. Those yeah. people exist. Yeah, I like that existing. Does. But you see that way more often than you see an actual, like, there are not very many shows that have a feminine gay man on them. There are a million shows that have a pretty butch, like, straight man and everything other than who he has sex with, and we never see that.
Right.
Like, that's more common. And everybody loves to trip over themselves so much. They love, you know, Captain Holt on Brooklyn Nine-Nine and Max on Happy Endings.
Right.
Those are great characters. But we see more of that than you see actual. And I just saw today, like, what the culmination of that is Love, Victor, the Love, Simon TV show.
Yes.
Season 2 has two straight actors playing gay characters. They do fine. Like, it's good. The writers wrote a scene where one of the main characters goes on, like, I guess a blind date or something with a guy. He uses a little bit of, like, gay slang, and the guy, like, cuts off the date. And he's like, sorry, I'm not into femme guys. I'm like, that's an interesting story to tell. That's realistic, that happens to people. It's an interesting thing to talk about in your show.
Yeah,
it doesn't work if your main character is extremely butch
and right.
like
yeah.
So you have this, like, very straight acting actor very unconvincingly reading this, like, RuPaul's Drag Race, like, gay slang
yeah.
in a very traditionally masculine voice, and then the other character being like, ugh, sorry, I'm not into femme guys.
Yeah.
Like, good news, he's not femme.
Yeah. yeah.
Femme people do exist. You don't cast them in your shows.
Yeah.
Like, and that's where we are now. It's like, now most of those roles are going to straight actors playing them very, very straight because everybody's scared of, like, they don't want to give into the stereotype.
I think that's what it is. And I think that it's also, they see it as they're trying to boost the, like, they're trying to boost the character
yeah.
by saying, oh, well, he's gay. It's going to help out everybody watching the show to know that this gay man can act like one of the guys.
But what ends up happening is it ends up stigmatizing gay men who aren't masculine.
It does.
Which
yeah.
you end up getting this dichotomy where it's like, okay, you have the good gays, which are basically straight, and
yeah.
then you have the bad ones that are maybe feminine or
right.
flamboyant or loud.
Right. Well, and I think that now we've gotten, within the last 5 years,
yeah.
we've gotten shows that do have realistic, just like.
Also, I would love for there to be, you know, for a long time, for a lot of shows, it was either a gay man who was mostly straight acting or a bi or lesbian woman for, like, eye candy. And that was all the queer rep.
Yeah.
I like now that we're getting some shows that have more. You know, you don't have to watch a show like Sense8. Sense8 has tons of queer characters. Some are trans, some are cis, some are lesbian or gay or whatever. Nobody has to carry the burden of being the sole representation. So you get a lot more variety.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
If we're only focusing on, like, you know, I want there to be realistic portrayals of gay men. As a gay man, I like to see that.
Yeah.
But there are a whole lot of other ways that people can be queer.
Oh, yeah,
that
for sure.
need to
yeah.
also be shown.
Yeah. Well, I think that's what it is. It's like they make it very binary.
Mm-hmm.
Like, on TV shows, it's either you have a gay man who's very
yeah.
both stereotypes, or you have a lesbian who's either eye candy or super butch.
Yeah. And that's, you don't see the butch ones very often. No. You see more eye candy than butch lesbians. Yes,
but it does exist.
Yeah.
Like, I think that within, like I kind of said before, it's we're getting to that point where it's actually way more nuanced on TV shows now. Mm-hmm. And so you have a show like Dickinson.
Yeah.
You know, like how I mean, going into that, I don't know anything about any Emily Dickinson.
Yeah.
Nothing. Like,
It is as muddy in the way it presents it as the actual history is.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think it's just because I'm very partial to, what is it? Oh, what is the song? My American Girl.
Your Best American Girl.
Your Best American Girl. Mitski, yes.
I mentioned that on this show before.
I listened to that, that song the other day, yeah. And it just reminded me of that scene, and I was like, oh, yeah. Shit.
That's an example, though, of a show where, like, you have Emily Dickinson, who is maybe trying to figure herself out, right. Doesn't really know what she is. She's a lesbian, but, like, going through that process, you also have Ben, who's Matt Loria, who is, you're able to see the story of what would it be like to be somebody who knows exactly who he is, but is closeted. Versus there are other characters on the show who are pretty there are men who are pretty flamboyant and feminine, where they're just kind of existing in this place where it's like an open secret. Because the show is willing to have more than one gay character, you can show all the different types.
Right, yeah.
And you can tell different stories.
Yeah.
Ben's story and Emily's story are very different, despite the fact that they're on paper kind of the same.
Yeah.
They're not the same.
No.
And I like getting to see both.
Yeah.
I was going to say, like, you know, I had a hard time coming down as is Friday Night Lights good or bad representation. It's both and neither.
Yeah.
It's frustrating to me that there's so little of it, but I love the fact that they handled what they did so well.
It is realistic, yeah. Like you've said.
One that I think really, really nailed this better than any other show I've seen in a while is season 2 of Pen 15. Did you watch that?
No.
It's similar. It's set in a time and place where it would not be super realistic to have characters that were out and proud.
Right.
They're 13 years old in the year 2000. It would ring false if you had a character be out publicly and everybody rallies around them and it's everything's good. That's not true. Like, it's a show that is really focused on the nitty-gritty of, like, realism in the year 2000 for good and bad. Like, it's not always pleasant. But it's cringefully true to life.
I did not know that those characters were essentially our age.
They're a little bit older than us.
Yeah, just the slightest bit.
Those actors.
Yeah.
Anyway, season 2 takes a character that we know in season 1 and gives him a really, really good season-long arc of kind of figuring out his sexuality in a way that doesn't have him do anything unrealistic, but gives it a full, like, fully fleshed out arc.
Right.
It's Gabe. You meet Gabe in season 1. He's the, like, chubby, redheaded kid, the awkward one. Season 2, they kind of show him realizing that he's gay. He dates Maya and then breaks up with her because he realizes it's not, you know.
Right.
He goes through a very, like, realistic, you know, time in that. Like, that's not, I was close to that age at that time.
Yeah.
It's very, very real in your life. What I noticed about it, though, is, like, if you're going to tell that story, it would be really easy to set a show in the year 2000 with teenagers and just have no gay characters and say, well, it wouldn't be realistic for them to be out at the time. That's true. It wouldn't be. It's shitty to not include them because they did exist.
Yeah.
If you want to include them, it takes real work. Writing wise, like, you have to be very, very intentional about it. And Pit 15 did, you know, you see the same complaints where it's like, well, how can you complain that this cast is all men and no women? Because that's realistic for the time. I'm like, no, women existed there.
Yeah.
You're just not telling their stories. Gay guys did exist in 2000.
Yeah.
It's just harder to tell their stories because they were in the closet.
Yeah.
I like the fact that the show puts in the effort to tell a story, even though it's a lot harder to tell because it's so secretive, and they really nail it. Like,
yeah.
Pull it off in a big way where they keep it subtle and they keep it realistic, but the story is told fully.
Yeah.
Better than I think I've seen. Because, yeah, most shows now, like most shows that are set in time periods where it wasn't as easy to be out just don't acknowledge it existing at all.
Yeah.
Or shows now have, unless it is something that is explicitly about something being hard, like unless it's Boy Erased or Miseducation of Cameron Post or something, most shows and TV shows have it just be this like conflict-free, happy world where homophobia doesn't exist. It takes a lot of like effort and intention to show a, to make a show where homophobia does exist, but you're still telling the story honestly.
Right. Yeah.
I think Friday Night Lights succeeds where it tries it, which is rare.
Right.
It succeeds. Pin 15 does that a lot bigger. Yeah. And I think better, which is cool. I really liked that as a, also I like showing a 13-year-old like, that's realistic. The issues he's dealing with are the same things that I was figuring out at 13. A lot of people were scared to do stories about kids that young.
Yeah.
And I like that they're doing it.
Yeah.
It's a good one. Also, it's the funniest show that's been on TV in 10 years.
I need to watch it. You've talked about it so often that
I really hope it gets to season 3.
Is it on Hulu?
Yeah, Hulu.
Yeah. So I've never actually watched it. So I need to.
I mean, season 1 is hilarious. Season 2 is the one that has the gay story, but you gotta, yeah, gotta watch season 1 first. That's all you got.
That's all you got. Okay.
I had a lot of thoughts. I can't remember the name of the bar in outside of Dillon. Apparently, Dillon has a gay bar. We found out in season 4.
But that makes sense.
I thought it was funny. Like, I guess probably Devin and Julie are 18 in season 4.
They would have to be.
But they're going to a bar that looks and feels very normal for like a country gay bar. Mostly grown men.
Yeah.
And they're just like 2 18-year-old girls. And they happen to see another girl roughly their age that Devin like goes and talks to. But I'm like, this is not... I get why she wants to go there. But as soon as they get there, I'm like, oh, Devin, this is not your scene.
I had, in Denison, there was one.
Yeah.
There was one gay bar, and it was, like, out in, like, the industrial area that didn't get used anymore.
Every area has one. You just might not know about it in every area. I think
it was called Good Times, if I'm not mistaken.
Like, a city will have them that you know about.
Yeah.
Everywhere has them.
Yeah.
Some places, they're just not as publicly.
Right, like, yeah.
But, like, there's going to be a place where people congregate no matter what.
Right. The one in Denton used to be called – I forget what it was called. It was called something like – I forget what the guy's name was. It was a guy's name, and then it was Cocktails and Chainsaw Repair.
See, we have some, like, punny – we have some bars that sound like they're bad pun gay bar names that are not gay bars. And our gay bars are not named that. We have the Drunken Oyster and Cock of the Walk. Neither one of them is a gay bar. And our actual gay bars are named very normal things. Yeah. You can email us at deviltownpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter at Deviltown Pod, at Organza Pleats, and at @A_Greenemeyer.
You can listen to our other podcast.
Yeah.
No, we have a name for it.
I forgot we have a name.
Yeah. It's Andalite Chronicles. It's basically where we don't recap, we dissect.
No, but we're going in order.
We're going in order.
This podcast.
But we dissect pretty much. Talk about
the Animorphs books.
Yeah, the Animorphs books. No, the Animorphs TV show. We talk about.
We have not watched that.
No, and I don't. Are we going to?
If we finish the book, maybe. We're only like a sixth of the way through the book series.
Eventually, we'll get there.
None of that. If you're listening to the, if you're the hypothetical person that doesn't exist that is listening to this the day we posted and looking for the website, it's not up yet.
Yeah,
but there will be a podcast called The Andalite Chronicles if you're interested in that, and then a yet to be named third podcast.
What are we doing with ourselves?
Podcasting.
Podcasts.
I like it.
We're going to, I don't know, that one's in the works.
That's no a name. Long way coming.
That's a long way. Yeah, it's a long way away. But it's working. Narrative something or other. I don't know.
That's a good name.
Narrative something or other. That's it. Got it. Then I feel like it has to like be about telling stories, and that's like,
I don't like telling stories.
Well, it's what the podcast's about.
We'll see.
All right. Bye.
You're Austin. I'm Mitch.
This has been Devil Town. Bye.